Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to the Prime Subjective, a Star Trek podcast, where we dive deep on Star Trek now and in the past. And right now, we're focusing on current Star Trek, as there's a new season of Discovery that just launched last week with its first two episodes, with the first episode being Red Directive, the second episode being... I got the name right here. Here it is. Under the Twin Moons. I got it. I nailed it. Okay, good. So we're excited to talk about those two episodes this week. But before we dive into the Trek, we've got our two normal panelists with us. We've got Carrie Coleman-Hinners.
Well, hello.
And we've got Michael Henley.
You may call me Action Michael.
Action Michael. That's very nice. That's very nice. I like that. And I'm Christy.
I changed
Summer.
Mine. You could change. Call me Action Carrie.
We've got Action Carrie, and we've got Action Mike, and we've got Sleepy Chris. So that's the three people who are here for the podcast today. But yeah, Carrie, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Sorry, I just put a piece of chocolate in my mouth, so that's very appropriate.
Really good podcast behavior.
Really good podcast behavior is eating chocolate. I'm doing great. Guess what? Today there was an eclipse. I don't know if you guys
knew
about that.
Some rumblings about that here and there. Yeah. Did you see it?
I did, and I'd like to leave my review of the eclipse here.
Okay. Let's hear it. Yeah.
I think they could have tried a little harder.
Yeah.
Were you even able to see it at its zenith? Because I feel like over here, the cloud cover made it almost impossible.
There was a lot of cloud cover. I saw a little toenail sliver of a sun. And I said, sun, moon, there's a lot of people watching. You gotta make a better show of it. So, and you know what? No one's talking about the moon. Everyone's about sun, but it's the moon's big show, you know? It's like the moon is stepping in front of the sun, but no, I'd like to see more moon. That's
are there little
thing.
Moons
so
on your shirt
review.
Or am I just Rorschach testing it over here?
Oh, I'm wearing little moons, you know, in honor of the day.
Oh, very nice.
So that's my review of the 2024 solar eclipse.
Michael, do you have a review of the eclipse or a view of how you're doing today?
Three out of five. I've seen better. You know, of all the celestial events that I have occur.
Underwhelming. It's underwhelming.
The cloud cover really, it just made me feel like we were about to get a storm as opposed to like experiencing an eclipse. Kept waiting for it to get darker and it didn't really. I kept waiting for like some kind of biblical thing to happen and it didn't really. Maybe that one didn't come advertised, but you know what? I kind of felt that maybe we were owed it. No, it was nice. And then it was over. And then maybe,
you don't have to worry, Michael, you don't have to worry about hurting their feelings.
Celestial beings, we're ants to them, so they're not going to worry about what we feel. You know,
I mean, you just said we need to give the moon more credit. I thought that was all about their feelings. I mean, I agree that the sun gets too much attention.
The sun is an attention whore. We can all agree with that. But attention whores have their place at the center of the universe.
Yeah. So. Not only has to have his time in the spotlight, he is the spotlight. Really, really.
Wow. You think the sun's a he. Wow, Michael. We see the patriarchy.
That's a good point.
Ugly head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good point.
Wow.
Yeah. It's going shopping and staring at that Raisin Bran box every single time. Basically, it does a number on you. Like, the sun's definitely a guy.
On the Raisin, that son, the Raisin Bran son is definitely a guy.
So blame Kellogg.
And regular at that.
Regular, yes. Which is important. Yeah. I don't understand why the sun became the mascot of... Anyway.
Who knows?
Because
who
knows? The sun dries up the grapes.
That makes a lot of sense, actually.
That would make a lot of sense. Okay. But why does he have scoops? Why does he have hands to hold the scoops?
Because he's scooping
up... And why are the scoops
up...
not melting?
Yeah. I would like to hear from Neil deGrasse Tyson on this. I'm sure he would just be like, first of all, the sun does not have facial features.
Yeah,
I want everyone to be clear on that.
I'm sure he's got some deep opinions about that, for sure.
Yes. Yep.
I also saw the eclipse today. I mean, I got a pretty good shot of it as I was walking over to my friend's rooftop to see it. But then we got up there and then, the clouds just sort of ruined it, which to me felt very Philadelphia. Like we came right to almost to the finish.
Oh, my God. I'm so happy that you said that because I've always thought that about Philly. Like, I love Philly, but it's always like You just get so close to the finish line.
Yeah, we got so close to the end. We got so close to the end.
And then you're just like, I think I'll take a nap.
And then, and then the planes around from Philly International blew up too many clouds, and we biffed it again. We biffed it at the final end goal, end game. I don't know sports terminology, but we ruined it at the end. Is what I'm trying to say. But hey, still brought people together. You know, we like monoculture that isn't divisive. So for the most part.
That's very Philly, right? We're very kind of uncomfortable with unqualified successes. We much prefer elevated failures. You know what I mean?
Well, we perform better when we're the underdogs. And the minute we look like we're going to win, then we're like, "What? Who are we?"
Yeah, we get very self-conscious.
We're successful. What? I don't know about that.
What will my identity be if we all of a sudden we're successful?
Who would I be if I was a winner? Well, I'd be New York. No, that's not.
Well, my partner still respect. Will my partner respect me in the morning? They will? Oh, no, I don't like this.
No, I'm out of here. Yeah, I got to go. Oh, that's very funny. Well, I think we don't really have any Trek in the news except for the fact that Discovery is back in full swing. And we've got two big episodes to discuss. So unless anybody else has got some Trek in the news, we can dive right into those episodes. Does that sound good?
I just want to say too, I think it's impossible to watch this season without A, knowing that it's the final season, of course, because they're advertising it, but B, also knowing that they didn't know it was going to be the final season. So I'm very curious. I'm kind of combing over like little bits of moments, just be like, is this
they
final
didn't
season prep?
No. So what's with all the goodbyes in every scene? Like
well, that's exactly what
okay, we'll
like, was this,
about it. Yeah. We'll talk about it.
Was this serendipitous or was what's going on here? I'm very curious. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely interesting. Well, I don't have my usual source of synopses, which is Wikipedia. This is from gamerant.com. So who knows what's going to happen right now, but I'm going to go for it.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
The Starship Enterprise under the command of Captain Jean-Luc Picard. I'm kidding. That's from one of my old.
Like, wait a second.
Episode 1 of season 5 is titled Red Directive, and it opens with Captain Michael Burnham on board an unknown ship. From there, it cuts back to a flashback of the beginning of her night at a reception aboard the Discovery, celebrating Federation Day. The Kelpian has some big news, Saru. He has some big news. He has been offered a job as a Federation ambassador, but he's conflicted about leaving the Discovery. Vance takes Burnham away to Kovich's super double secret infinity room. That was the best way. For a briefing about a 24th century Romulan science vessel, which was found at the edge of the Beta Quadrant. She declares the mission a red directive. Elsewhere, Vance orders the Antares and the Discovery to head to Kamau. Before she leaves, Burnham gets Sylvia Tilly to do some database investigation at Fed HQ to get around Kovich. The thieves head to the desert planet and find Fred, who it turns out is an eccentric android. He is interested in the puzzle box, which he opens and speedily reads the old journal of Romulan scribbles and diagrams. He offers 3 bars of latinum in a risky deal. Maul and Locke choose to get shot. But Fred's henchmen end up dead, and the synth is left with a big hole in his chest. The Federation arrives too late, but they beam what remains of Fred up to the ship as they split up to find the bad guys. Back at the Academy, Tilly gets caught hacking, but Vance covers for her as he's growing tired of Kovich's behavior as well. She finds an old recording of a Romulan scientist talking about the secrets he has written in the journal, dropping clues about twin moons and an ancient technology that cannot fall into the wrong hands. Michael, Book, and Rayner head into the desert for a bike chase, while Maul and Locke get to their ship and plan an escape with the use of some tunnels. The trio debate over how to counter this move, with Burnham warning Rayner that if they order the Antares to close the tunnel, it could trigger an avalanche that could destroy the town. Rayner decides to take the risk and avoids an avalanche of epic proportions, but the thieves decide to trigger one anyway. They try to figure out a way to save the town and figure the only logical solution is to use both ships as giant sand wedges to build a shield wall. However, Rayner isn't convinced about the plan, but agrees to it when they're reminded that Starfleet is about saving innocent people. The ships save the town and the locals cheer in relief. However, Rayner doesn't join in the celebrations as Maul and Locke have escaped again. Discovery returns to the space dock and reflects on the day's events and realizes the future lies with I see. So this person is dropping names left and right. Discovery returns to space dock, and Saru is reflecting on the day's events and realizes his future lies with Tarina. Meanwhile, in sickbay, Hugh and Paul are sorting through Fred's positronic brain, when Burnham spots a clue that identifies the twin moon's location, which gives her justification to confront Kovage, who is looking at the wrong planet. He briefs her on what's really going on, and it turns out the long-dead Romulan scientist was named Dr. Velik, and he was present when Captain Jean-Luc Picard found a message left by ancient beings who created every humanoid species in the galaxy. This is a reference to season 6, the final episode of season 6 of Next Generation called The Chase. Velik found their technology, and now the greatest treasure in the known galaxy is up for grabs, and Maul and Locke are already in line to find it. However, Michael and Discovery are competing with them to get there first. And it's the first episode of season five of Star Trek Discovery.
I love it, but forgive me if I'm wrong, but I don't recall that synopsis talking about when they originally go to find Maul and Locke, and then there's a whole chase when she's jumping, she's doing like a space jump, and she's on top of their ship at warp.
Correct.
And then Rainer, did they talk about that in the
they didn't no you're right fill, fill, no, us in, they, fill us in on that part
and yeah, I'm yeah. like they we need to talk about that because that's like a big major it plot wise it could they we didn't need it but like major effects was really cool. The part that was really cool was when they beamed her in as she was coming like through their view screen, and then she went right to the seat. I thought that was a cool effect. So I thought we should talk about that before we go on to our.
I thought something was missing. I thank you for pointing that out. That's like the flashback of it all. Like that's how we catch up with her.
And she's on top of their ship.
Right.
But speaking of that, like this episode had several major action scenes. So it was that and the bike chase and the avalanche. And there's something else. I feel like there were like three things. Now I can't remember. They could have done like one of those things and it would have been enough.
They're trying to start off with a bang and doing maybe more than they need to do.
Which makes me wonder, when you said they didn't know it was their final season, like
were they fighting
that and they didn't know it was their final season?
Well, maybe they were trying to get more seasons by having an action-packed first episode of season 5, you know.
I think this is always Discovery's thing. Shout out to Jay who used to join us for the podcast to do this.
Jay Nim,
Jay Nim. we love you, Jay. At the risk of falling into kind of a J circle here, as I just discussed Star Trek Discovery, Star Trek Discovery is a show I like very much, but I will say that I feel like every, especially season opener, has been very aggressive about trying to grab you, whether it's an elaborate action sequence or a huge special effects sequence or both at the same time. And this one, definitely multiple action sequences in a way that just makes me go like, God, I forgot how much money they spend on this show. Like,
I think it's crazy. Ironic. It's ironic that they were calling Saru Action Saru in the second episode because like Michael Burnham is just like going and go. She's never sitting down. She is never sitting in that captain's chair.
Right.
And I think as I was watching this, I'm like, that's kind of what I miss about her as a captain. Like, she's not actually captaining per se, she's just sort of running around and letting Saru do everything,
letting Saru be the responsible parent back on the ship while she's riding ships, or being the what was that, she was a couple seasons ago where she ended up being that the Red Angel or the red thing that, like, led them in.
Why does it have to be you, Michael Burnham? But the other effect I was talking about, the ships coming down and shielding the town with the anvil, that's nuts.
It was very cool. I did really like this episode though, and I did they achieved a lighter tone than they have in a while. I found myself not doing a lot of eye rolling at earnestness, and rather being like, oh, this is kind of fun and light in parts. And like, they're giving Tilly a flirty love interest, which I was like, yes, do that. I want that. This is the kind of stuff I'm interested in seeing.
Yeah, there was that weird scene that didn't come back in the second episode, but maybe we'll see it
again. I think we'll see more down the line, but I think they're just showing that Tilly, now that Tilly has like her feet on the ground, knowing that she's happy as a teacher, now she's also happy to be like, oh, I can flirt with another person now too. And be really awkward scene, at it, like I am with everything.
During that scene, I was thinking, like, we can't all be awkward on this ship. Like, some people need to be confident. Like, I'll allow you one awkward person on. Like, we can't all be, broccoli. Can't all be broccoli.
Can't all be broccoli.
We can't all be broccoli. I was just gonna say I was grateful to see Tilly again, by the way. Since she departed midway through last season, I didn't actually even know that she was going to be present this season, and I really missed her. And I was watching old Discovery episodes because I had this crazy idea that I was going to be able to rewatch the entire show before this season premiere. Hello, that did not happen. But anyway, I was watching early Discovery with my partner. She had never seen the show, and we got to Tilly's introduction. She's like, oh, she's delightful. Does she stick around? Yeah. She sticks around. Right. And I was like, yeah, oh, kind of like, I wish she stuck around a little bit more. So it was very nice to see her again.
Well, and I think part of the reason that she left is because it was exactly what Carrie's talking about. Like, say, they had too many people who were awkward on the show, and they had to juggle them a little bit.
Why I was confused why they added Blue Del Barrio's character, because I was like, don't you have enough people on your show to?
When Blue's on Trail now, right? So Blue's no longer, right? Oh no, Blue is.
What's Blue's character's name?
Isn't Blue I'm wrong. That's not Blue. That's I'm thinking of Blue's partner on the show.
Oh yeah, no, they have a shaved head. But what the heck is their name now? Now I don't even remember their name. That's
a great sign.
The name of the character. But they have this weird like adopted child relationship with the doctor and Stamets.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I'm like, you can do your own thing. You don't need to go with them. It's,
well, I think they're doing like a chosen families thing, which I think is kind of sweet, actually.
It's true. But to me, like, I understand that. I love that. I love chosen family stuff. Yeah. I feel like everybody on Star Trek, if you're on the ship, it's like, this is your chosen family.
Yeah.
For me, just like, you don't need to go home with them. You can just hang out.
But none of them wanted to be at the party anyway. So, I mean,
they wanted to be at the party.
Yeah.
And then
Tilly comes back drunk. I did enjoy that, a little drunk Tilly talking to Michael, and that was very funny too.
That was cute.
Yep.
Anytime they can get away from Cynthia Hall and really get into the good stuff, it reveals some fun things for us as the viewer, for sure.
I liked the character of Fred so much that I was sad that they killed him. And I was really hoping that they would bring him back long enough to explain what he read himself, other than just reading what he read. I think that was a really sad thing to kill that ancient.
I wonder if they will still bring him back later on down. Because, you know, they're always like, it's very soap opera-y, and they'll be like, we thought you were dead, but we found the part we needed to bring you back.
They certainly could. Yeah.
I liked his android personality.
I think if they bring him back, what I would love for them to do is get him a wig that fits, because that wig did not fit. It was too big, and I was like, I was distracted by like the extra wigness going on back here, and I'm like, what's
it was really goofy.
They had a lot of hair stuff going on this episode. Tilly's hair also. I was like, what's going on, girl? What's happening there?
Yeah, there was a lot of hair. There was a small little joke about him finding self-sealing stem bolts. And I just giggle when anybody mentions self-sealing stem bolts. It's just a stupid little joke that I appreciate.
I love how it's a big running gag, basically, about like just throwing more and more confusion on what exactly they do. Because wasn't that their deal from the start, where it's just
stem
like...
bolt. Yeah, it's like, self-seals.
It's self-seals. It's stem bolt, right. But stem bolt. Yeah. Isn't that that's like an early DS9, like Jake and Nog, like they were they get a crates of those, and they're like, "This is great." But also, what do we have? We don't know what we have. What is this? How do we trade?
They called themselves the No J Consortium.
That's right.
They do a lot of trading. That's a great one.
I didn't pick up on that. So that's a DS9 original reference. Okay.
That's a DS9. What that's I think been retroactively like put into like the entire franchise.
Yeah, and then they just like a running bit, and they do like running bit on like Lower Decks. I've heard them mention self-sealing stem bolts a couple times. I don't know why. I just giggle. Like that's the kind of humor that I like.
Right.
That Discovery is like so serious. Time.
But I feel like these first two episodes have been less serious. I mean, they've had their serious moments, but they've achieved a lighter tone.
They're very capery. Yeah. Like even the villains, like, and we talked about Fred, but even the two.
Oh yeah, Mock and Lal.
Mock and Lal, like they're very like kind of like
no Maul and like, Locke.
Maul and Locke. Sorry. Yeah. What if what if the villain was actually Lal, Data's daughter, who somehow survived for 1,000 years, come back to be the villain? That I would be here for.
They almost play like James Bond or like Indiana Jones villain. Like they're not wacky with a capital W, but like they're a little bit wacky.
But they were giving me also like, okay, are these like the second choice for the Pokemon villains too? Like they're like the. There's something about her wig as well that I'm just like, you guys.
Yeah.
Who's doing the wigs this season? Because I have questions. But they're fun, though. I mean, they have
the far, far future, Chris. It's the far, far future.
So we're out of human hair wigs in the far, far future, and it's all Party City from here to eternity. That's really
material.
Funny.
They're just materialized matter.
I will say the wig they have Tilly in looks like a wig that I when I turned 18, convinced my mom to let me throw a costume party, and I wanted to go as Bernadette Peters, so I needed a curly red hair wig. And we went to some wig shop where we spent like too much money in like 1999 or whatever it was on a wig that was really, I guess, like an 80s Reba McEntire wig. So it was like a curly mullet, like 80s kind of thing. And that is the wig that Tilly is wearing.
Yeah. Are you sure? That's partly her hair. That must be extensions. Like that's her hair, I think.
I have to tell you, really, when you see people on most programs and they have any hair that is bigger than like this, they're wearing a wig. Yeah. Mm. It's mostly wigs. Just because it makes it easier. It's easier on their hair too.
It's easier for like continuity, especially if you're like you're filming episodes out of order, or like, you know, sprinkling in throughout multiple, you know, like all that kind of stuff.
The power of wigs.
Oh, I will look closer, because I guess I always assumed it was sort of like their hair on top and they just sort of filled it in.
That could be it. Could be a fall.
Yeah. What's it called? A fall.
Like you would clip it in here and it just comes out the back like a waterfall of hair behind your head.
Yes, that's what I think she's wearing. That's my theory on Tilly's hair.
We'll do some research. We'll see. Yeah. We'll see. Tilly wig. I'm gonna look it up right now. That's very funny. Any other parts of this episode that stood out to you guys?
Well, we had some tender moments with Saru and Tarina, who are in love and getting official married, as what they call it on some planets in the galaxy. And then we had another interesting scene with Booker and Michael Burnham.
Yeah.
Where they're like broke up, but like they were already broke up, but they broke up again. Like, just
you have the conversation about like, this is really, or, you know, we're acknowledging that they're really apart, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Really, like,
yeah.
Yeah. But also, why did they break up? Because he did something bad and she doesn't trust him and then he went away?
I didn't get that energy. I got it more as just like, I don't have the capacity for a long-term relationship, and our relationship has, you know, by definition become, excuse me, not long-term, but long distance. And it's
nothing's
definitely
long distance
that.
In Star Trek. They just zip.
Yeah, but I mean, he's still.
He's also so focused on his penance. Like he's so focused on making right what he did in, you know, the last season. So I think that's what's keeping them apart. I feel like they're trying to set them up to maybe come back together, though. I mean, they're definitely these moments that are seem to point to that.
I would think so.
I thought, like, I was surprised to see him in the second episode because I thought that was his, like, goodbye. I'm like, okay, well, this is the episode where we're saying a final goodbye to David Ayala. Yeah. And then he came back, so. And now I thought that the second episode is when we're saying goodbye to Doug Jones, but now it seems like we're not really saying goodbye to anybody. It's just going to be a long goodbye every single episode. We're just going to keep saying goodbye, goodbye, goodbye. I thought I said really, goodbye to you already.
It's going
to
get really painful.
It's like when you say goodbye to somebody and then you have to take the elevator together. So,
oh, yeah. Right. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Just say goodbye. I can't say anything else to you now.
Oh, we're parked right next to each other.
Yes, goodbye again.
I'm coming up short on her hair. And I think maybe that could be her hair. Her hair is kind of very curly. So maybe it is Mary Wiseman. I don't know. We'll have to see.
It's at least her hair color. Like, I think she has red curly hair, but they floofed it up, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
We should probably mention something about the chase, the episode, The Chase. We don't have to.
Yes, absolutely.
Too much about it.
Yeah. The episode, The Chase, where basically Picard's mentor, when he thought he was maybe going to become an archaeologist, comes to the ship and he's
Daylan Quayce? No, not
it's not Daylan Quayce. That is Dr. Crusher's mentor. Yes.
But it is like Galen or Gallic or
yeah, it's Galen.
Yeah.
Professor Galen, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he brings him this gift and he's like, it's complete. And he looks inside and it's all this stuff. And basically he's trying to entice Picard to come with him on the greatest archaeological expedition of all time. And then Picard refuses, and then his professor's ship comes under attack. And they go to save him, but then he's basically at death's door and he basically wants to finish this journey for his professor who's died. And it takes them on this journey that puts them in contact with Klingons, Romulans, Cardassians, who are all on the same path of this big secret that they don't know what it is, but they know it could change their lives. And I think the Klingons think it's a weapon and the Cardassians think it's like some sort of source of power. And I forget, and we don't really know what the Romulans think because we don't see them till the very end of that. But then as it turns out, they have to, it's this piece of genetic code found in species on 19 different planets throughout the galaxy. And there's this thing that looks like it's actually designed. It's not by nature. And so then as they begin to put these together, they finally come to this final planet and they get the final piece. And now it's all four of those species together, the Romulans, Cardassians, Klingons, and the Federation. Mm-hmm. And they put it into, they scrape it off like the fossilized seabed, which is just one of the many caves.
And then it's a hologram, and then it's an ancient hologram.
So an ancient hologram saying that, hello, we are the, and meanwhile, he does it, and then he like puts his, it's altering my tricorder and projecting something. Yeah. And then he like immediately puts the tricorder down.
It's like, if you're reading, if you're listening to this, we're dead.
Right.
And that means that our babies are all grown up now, and I hope you're not fighting. So I hope you're reading this message and you'll get some peace now. Bye.
Well, the message being that, you know, they seeded all of those planets and the humanoid life that has come to be, all of these species we see in front of us come from the same place, from this original humanoid species who developed too early when no one else was around.
And they were all so upset about it that they decided collectively never to talk about it ever again.
Until
because it was just so terrible.
Right.
This is awful. So let's not talk about this.
Is that in the, I did not rewatch the Next Gen episode. Is that in the episode that they kind of keep it under wraps, or how does that play out?
Well, the way that they leave it is basically like a little jokey. It's like, it's the Cardassians being like, a Cardassian related to a Klingon, preposterous. And then they like beam up and don't, you know, they don't like reference what they're going to do about it, but it's very
flippantly dealt with.
Yeah.
I'm remember, and maybe I'm just making this up, but I'm remembering a line that's like, we will never speak of this or something.
I don't remember that part, but maybe
I made that up. Maybe I made that up. maybe I just wished that was a line that was in the show. So this is what I'm hesitant about the new Red Directive episode that we just watched with Star Trek. Discovery, is it like a technology that can be used again? Is this like the Genesis device? Is this like, are you going to just destroy a planet by making it populated with your DNA? Are you like, how is this, how could this possibly be a weapon in the wrong hands? It sounds like these progenitors put their own DNA all over the place. So
sounds gross when you put it that way.
So it's just my, it sounds, when you say it that way, then I get a visual of them seeding the galaxy. So I don't, so thanks a lot, Michael. I'm just saying, I'm not fully buying that it's that big of a deal, bad weapon.
Well, maybe it's more that they can... It's such a huge power to wield the ability to create life in this way or design life in this way that you can seed other planets or create your own empire simply by using it to build it out that way.
Millions of thousands of years for all of these.
Yeah, no, I know.
Right, right.
So they just like put little micro, the organisms in the water on some planets and we had to evolve from the ooze. So... we still evolved on our own planets. So anyway, that's all I'm saying. We'll have to watch and they'll have to sell it to me a little bit more.
Yeah.
There was an episode of Voyager with dinosaurs. Do you remember this episode?
Yes. That's right.
Where
the
dinosaurs were actually, aliens and they built a spaceship and flew away.
And left Earth.
Left Earth and went to the other side of the galaxy. Mm-hmm. And some of the dinosaurs were like, I have figured out where our original, origin story is, and nobody wanted to hear it. So I'm recalling this episode because it feels like this is some big secret that nobody knew about, even though some people knew about. So I would think that the secret is bigger than the weapon itself, but we'll see.
Yeah. We will. We will indeed.
I feel like we're in for some kind of switcheroo, that this isn't about a weapon at all. I think that is what they want us to think. I'm sure many participants in this, this big chase that's happening, I'm sure that's, what they think. But I feel like that's not what it's going to be. I feel like it's going to be, just like in the Next Gen episode, I feel like it's going to be more revelation more than anything else, I think. Whether it's a good revelation or a bad revelation, remains to be seen.
Right. Yeah. Well, we will find out together as the season unfolds. And speaking of the unfolding season, we have one more episode to discuss. Unless you've got other final thoughts on this first episode, I'll dive into that description. Great. Episode 2 of Star Trek Discovery is titled Under the Twin Moons. It begins with Captain Michael Burnham considering philosophical questions about the meaning of life as Discovery gets all the sand from Kamal removed from it. She ponders the possibility of new purpose as the stakes of her new mission to find the progenitor's power take their toll on her. Before they head off to find the next clue, Burnham is summoned to a tribunal for Rayner, who is called to the space carpet due to his reckless actions. Burnham doesn't want to be a snitch, but when she is pressed on the matter, she admits she disagreed with Rayner and told him exactly that. Admiral Vance and President Rilik aren't happy, and once Rayner accuses them of ignoring potential threats, his future in Starfleet is not looking too promising. Elsewhere, Vance checks in with Burnham to make sure Book isn't being a distraction. It turns out he is working with Hugh and Paul to sort out clues left behind by Dr. Velik. Adira and Tilly brief Burnham and Saru on how the shadow of the twin moons points to an old Primellian necropolis, but an energy field means they will have to move from the beam-in spot. With an emotional goodbye on the horizon, Burnham and Saru acknowledge their last mission together and head to the biggest pyramid. Saru offers advice on his replacement as first officer, with suggestion that Burnham find someone who stands their ground, not unlike Book. A spike in the EM field makes Tilly concerned, but Burnham reassures her there is nothing to worry about. But at this point, killer drones emerge from a giant collapsed four-eyed alien statue's head, forcing them to run. And on the Discovery, Adira, Tilly struggle over how to help the landing party, now hiding under a giant stone foot as the drones fire and blow up on suicide runs. Rayner holograms himself into the situation and guides them towards a solution that factors in how the ancient Promelians would power an automated security system. They overload a phaser inside the giant statue's head, and Burnham offers to take the job of target distraction, but Saru reminds her he is stronger and faster. He dodges fire and dispatches the drones with his quills, which was very cool, as usual, to see that. Burnham then drops the bomb, which buys them some time. Burnham and Saru are under a ticking clock before the drones power up again as they arrive at where the clues pointed, with no ancient power source to be found. Saru detects traces of writing in the form of a Romulan poem, so Burnham uses her powers to determine the existence of only four verses on the pillar, but where is the fifth? Powers of deduction, I want to say. It makes it sound like she's got superpowers, which she does not. They find the final verse under the pillar, and they beam out at the last second before the EM defense field restarts. In the science lab, it turns out the thing they found matches a mysterious symbol from the diary. They now have the first of five pieces of a map that would lead them to the progenitors. Burnham checks in with Vance, who tells her the day's mission was a success. As for Rayner, he has been asked to retire. Burnham defends his actions and has an idea of sorts. Burnham finds him staring longingly at her ship, and he states he isn't willing to back down from his principles, but he regrets not anticipating that what Maul and Locke did on Kumail, which resulted in all those people being put at risk. Burnham offers him a lifeline as her new first officer, and she's impressed with how he helped out on the Lyric mission and figures he deserves a second chance. He announces that he won't be a yes man, and she doesn't want him to be. That's this second episode. I think they missed some stuff there too. I think we also, there's a marriage proposal in there that's not mentioned, among many other things. But what did you guys think of this episode?
More sedate slightly?
This episode felt like really the start of their adventure. Like the first episode was, set up what the adventure is. But now we're like, all right, now we've got to start collecting clues. Like a galaxy-wide escape room is what I was sort of thinking of it as. Like, let's look under the rock. What's this key? Maybe it fits into this other thing.
Galaxy-wide escape room, yes.
And it's interesting that they're doing a chase, which is what the name of the Next Generation episode is.
Michael, what about you?
I enjoyed it. I think this episode, I feel like, gave me kind of less to talk about. Because again, I think I kept accepting it as a goodbye to Saru episode, and then that's not what it is. Right. I kind of felt watching this episode shortly before, getting a chance to record this episode, having watched it last night, having come home from work, it's the kind of episode that made me go like, I wish I had time to watch that again, because it's tough to kind of, it was tough for me on first watch to kind of take it on its own terms, I think.
Yeah.
So they went to this monument. Oh, the other thing it reminded me of was the Zelda, any Zelda game where statues come to life and start shooting beams at you if you can.
I was going to say the exact same thing. These are just, these are old. Oh. Yeah. Sentinels,
they're on
are
Hyrule.
Old.
Hyrule planet.
Which actually made me like it a lot more. I was like, well, this is kind of fun to have a little Zelda influence on this game.
I would love if one of the planets in the Star Trek universe was a Hyrule planet. That's what it made me think of. Like everything really was in the first episode. Everything that we needed to know was in the first episode, and this was just
right.
I don't know. Getting
more,
the party
more perfunctory,
started.
Moving the plot forward. Yeah, not yeah. like a, yeah, yeah. Right. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Right.
We did have some conversations between Tilly and Adira. Now I remember their name. and some nice conversations between Vance. Booker. Another scene which I thought the previous episode was like, oh, he's gone. No, now he's back, and they're just having more relationship stuff. I didn't mention it before, but we were talking about Red Directive, but I love the Infinity Room that they beam into for their secret, like, secret cone of secrecy meetings. Yeah. It's so ridiculous, isn't it? It's like suddenly they're in this white room that nobody can see or hear them.
I just love that it's this, like, little infinity pin that they just throw to each other. It's like, now we're in the room. No one can see us. Cone of silence.
It is. It is the cone of silence from Get Smart.
Yeah. Very, very that. Very that.
Was the another question that I had for Michael, I guess it's about both of these episodes because it's related to the chase.
Yes.
Did and I know you know answers to things, which is why I'm asking.
Sometimes.
Does it have, was the one first question is, did the Red Directive come up in any other episode? Like, is this the first time we're hearing about the Red Directive?
I don't hold me to this because I'm sure there's someone out there who might be able to cite chapter and verse for where I'm incorrect. Mm-hmm. But as far as I know, no.
Maybe a novel or something. Like, maybe, sometimes they weave in facts from novels. And then did Baku have anything to do with it? Remember Baku from...
From Insurrection?
From Insurrection? Maybe I'm imagining this.
Did the Baku have anything to do with the Red Directive?
Or did the planet that the Baku... The progenitors.
I don't think so.
I don't think so. Yeah.
No, they just found a planet that kept them young.
Okay. My mind is doing some fan fiction, I guess.
And what I found on Memory Alpha is that Red Directive, the first time we've heard of Red Directive is this season and this and Discovery. So it's not...
super serious.
Yeah.
But Rainer has been on several Red Directive missions, apparently. This is not his first Red Directive mission. There's so many for him, at least.
Right. Not his first Red Dio, as it were.
He was saying he's in Starfleet for 30 years, but the previous season... We were trying to figure out where Starfleet was, and it was sort of spread across the galaxy, and they couldn't contact each other. So how is he on Red Directive missions? And
I guess he was doing smaller ones with burn-friendly technology. So he's not using any dilithium, but still trying to do these kinds of missions. Because it's not that the Federation didn't exist. It's that they first found an outpost. They didn't find actual the headquarters until later on. Mm-hmm.
These are the questions that I have when I try to square what I remember with what they're saying in the moment. So I'm trying to figure out, I'm trying to fill in the blanks. Like, oh, he said he's been doing this for 30 years. So my mind starts thinking about this specific character and how he had possibly been doing this for 30 years.
Yeah.
But he's going to now take a demotion instead of a forced retirement. He's going to go from captain to first officer.
Right.
Is what we're saying.
Right. Rather than retiring in semi-disgrace, he's going to try and keep Burnham on her toes, as it were.
And good thing, because I don't think that Cleveland Booker would make a good first officer because he's not a good communicator.
Well, and also that's frogs. You don't want to be your ex-boyfriend can't be your first officer.
Well, I mean, that would be fun, you know.
Fun to watch.
Drama. Yeah. But he's not a good communicator, am I right?
Yeah,
might as well have that cat be the first officer.
Yeah, if I wanted to see a TV show about ex-boyfriends who are bad communicators, I would simply read my diary. You know what I mean? I don't need.
Oh, burn. Ex-boyfriend burns.
Yeah.
What else do we have to say about this? What do you think, Chris? Did you fully give your...
I liked it. I think, you know, I watched it on Thursday after I think I had been out. I forget what I was doing. So I was already in a jovial mood. Maybe that helped me enjoy both these episodes. But I thought they were good. I like the tone they're sort of setting. I like the caper feel. I think that's kind of really cool.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
No, no.
Well, I was just going to say too, I mean, something, sorry, this was cooking for a second. I just think that if you're a season of Star Trek Discovery and you have to do the, we're going to do a season long story where we run around the galaxy, which has been pretty much every season after, after the first one. Right. I feel like this is probably the way to do it, where it's like, it's lighter, it's capery, it's not something where it's just like, this will be the end of creation as we know it, which they have done right. several times, mm-hmm. you right. know, like this feels different.
Correct. Yeah. yeah. No, I agree completely.
There was a lot of feeling and not several characters, possibly all the characters, where they talk about, their conversations were mostly about how we've changed. We're very right. different characters from the characters we started with. We're very different.
Which you're right, does feel very growing. Like final season mm-hmm. vibes. It's like, look at us. We're seniors mm-hmm. now. I can't believe we're mm-hmm. about to graduate.
Yeah, but a lot of their conversations were like very same sort of conversations that they just kept having. And Stamets was like, at one point I said out loud, oh, get over yourself, when I was watching the show. Like he could actually, like, he was an actual person. He's a character.
I think it's funny because didn't you, I think you're a big fan of his, though. You really love that actor, don't you? I feel like.
No, that's the.
We all like the actor.
You're remembering the opposite of what I said.
Oh, right. I'm remembering. You're exactly right. Stamets is not your favorite. I forgot.
Yeah, I said exactly that, but opposite.
But different. But a different vibe.
I am going to be. I know there are several episodes of Discovery left. I know this is a show that we all like very much, but I'm going to say something that we may have discussed before, but I feel like Anthony Rapp as an actor has been kind of not, has been done a disservice, I think, with the character of Stamets, mm-hmm. because I think mm-hmm. he is a much more capable actor than basically, than he deserved, I think, a little bit more than what they gave him to do.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Maybe you're right. Maybe that's why I just don't like him. And in this character, in this role, like, mm-hmm, and there's something about how he says his lines and the lines that they give him. And he's always like questioning things. Like, could you even materialize this thing in front of us? Thanks. Like, I mean, why are you questioning everything? You're the engineer. So it's not his fault completely.
I'm ready for Jet Reno to come back. I'm like,
they name drop Jet Reno. I was looking for, yeah.
I think they're going to be, I think Tig's coming. I think she's just not in all the episodes. Yeah, I think Tig is there. So that will be a welcome addition to the season for sure.
Yeah.
Did we want to, any final thoughts on this episode before we go to Carrie's new favorite segment, which is the three body problem corner?
Yeah. Oh,
if you can see, I've already pulled up information on that on have my you screen. Really?
I knew there was homework I should have done. I'm sorry.
Oh wait, Michael, are you still only like a couple episodes in?
I'm still only like one episode in. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay.
We can talk about it though. I mean, I've read the first two books, so like I know what the show is playing with.
No, the show is so different though. Like, I want to specifically talk about this show, but no, we don't have to talk about it because it's not what our podcast is about.
And we don't want to. I do want you to have the watching experience, Michael. Yes. Without us coloring your view on it.
But I do have some three body problem in the news.
Great. Hey. Three.
I don't have any Trek in the news.
TBP ITN. Perfect. We got it.
Did you guys see the headlines about the person who was sentenced to death after poisoning a producer on the show?
No, yes, I did see this. Yes.
Yes. So a producer, Lin Chi, who helped, I think that's how you pronounce QI, helped mm-hmm. bring the three body problem to screens before the series aired. And I'm reading this on Microsoft News, so I don't get it wrong. And he was poisoned in 2020 by Xu Yao, who headed up a subsidiary that oversaw adaptations of the book. So like the day or the day after the series aired, he was sentenced. He was given the death sentence.
Oh, my God.
Because
for poisoning. Oh, my God.
So poisoning one of the producers.
And the producer died?
Yeah. Died before. God. Yeah. Yeah. So that's a thing that happened.
Oh.
So Crazy, right?
Yeah.
Jeez. He was a billionaire. He is a... No. The person who died was dubbed China's billionaire millennial.
Oh, so young.
Oh.
Yes. And why he killed that person? Not in that news article that I read.
That's strange.
So...
Perhaps. Sounds like a one body problem, if you know what I mean. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Something. Xu is believed, XU, again, I think it's how it's pronounced, how I'm saying it. Xu is believed to have begun poisoning his colleagues 3 months after this company brokered a deal with Netflix. Well
maybe monetary gain was the, was the poisoning reason, you know.
Yeah.
Less people to pay if they're dead.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, anyway, there's more details to that, but look that up.
Yeah, look up the murder from the three body problem if you're interested in a new mystery. Our new podcast, The One Body Problem, coming soon, covering the murder of the three body podcast. Very exciting.
Three body podcast. There's three of us.
There you go.
hey,
three potty casts. No, something like that. We'll figure it out. We'll circle.
So this
now we can never have a guest ever.
This company this guy worked for, Yuzu Games. No, this company that Lin Chi. It's a very confusing murder, and I'm not clearly a murder podcaster.
Right.
True crimes podcaster. Lin Chi, who passed away, owns the rights for all the adaptions of the three body.
Yeah, well, there's your motive.
Yeah.
Have either of you watched the Chinese television adaptation?
I just saw that existed. I have not seen any of it. Have you?
Yeah, no. I have not. No, I wanted to. I believe it's on Peacock as opposed to
Ooh, maybe I'll check that out.
As opposed to the Western adaptation being on Netflix. Yeah.
I don't know if I've given any pronouns, but he is the correct pronoun. Lin Chi, he, and Xu Yao, he.
Okay. Well, stay tuned for updates on the three body problem murder. And then maybe when Michael gets to watch more of it, the three body problem itself.
Yes.
But in the interim, do you guys have anything else that you're watching and enjoying? Any other recommendations?
I just watched the solar eclipse. So right.
Well, you gave your recommendation earlier.
A chance to see a solar eclipse. Do go out and see one. Uh-huh. No, I've been gardening. So enjoy the nice weather in the spring.
That's yeah, embrace it while it's here. It's so short-lived. I agree with that. Mm-hmm. I don't have anything to recommend. I did today. I went to WHYY and I appeared on the television program Check Please, hosted by Kehlani Palmisano. Which is fun. So we got to go to these three different restaurants, which I can't reveal what the restaurants are. I can mention that I was on the show, but I can't reveal the restaurants until our episode drops in October.
Did you have to sign something?
Well, and that they were, it's a little loosey goosey. It's WHYY. They weren't like, I wasn't signing in blood here, but,
Right.
But it was so fun.
They said, don't tell anybody. And you said, okay, but that sounds fun.
Yeah. We each got to pick a restaurant, and then we were like, each of the guests went to the restaurants, and then we discussed them in a fun little roundtable discussion today, and it was great. And I was like, "Oh, I love being on camera." It was a good time.
Camera.
No, it was really fun. So I recommend being on TV if you can. What I'm recommending.
Sounds great.
You know when your episode will air?
Yeah, I think October. I don't know the exact dates, but October is what Kehlani said.
Okay.
Caitlin Corkery is one of the producers. And I think Caitlin's also a former Philly person.
And she
hosts The Moth sometimes as well. So very cool. I guess I recommend The Moth. I went to The Moth last week and it was a lot of fun. The Moth Story Slam here in Philadelphia at the World Cafe Live. Also a very good time.
Mm-hmm. Anything from you, Michael?
Yeah. I wish. No, I don't. Especially, I feel especially bad now since it's clear I should have been binging Three Body Problem this weekend. I don't know what came over
it's
me.
It's all good.
It's a special, you know, like limited segment that we're doing on right. Yeah. Show.
This just gets to my big complaint right now about media, where there's just way too much TV. Just way too much TV to watch. You know, like a show will happen and it's just like, okay, cool. I have 12 hours of homework now to do this weekend because you dropped it all at once. Well, you know what? And I just get very, you know, kind of, I get slightly put off basically. And
it's not, you only have a limited amount of time. So you want to watch what's worth it to watch, you know?
And not only that, I mean, like, if anything, this segment is really encouraging and should be encouraging my habits here, because if anything, when these shows drop all at once 3 weeks later and like no one's talking about it. And if that's when my interest is circled around again, it makes me go like, oh, I see. Well, why no one else is talking about it, you know?
Well, I'm there right now because there's four different versions of The Traitors on Peacock. And now I'm like also in the midst of watching
The Traitors. That's what I wanted to watch.
Australian Traitors. I'm watching UK Traitors. They just dropped New Zealand Traitors. I'm like, okay, I can't. I need to.
Wow.
It's all very good, but it's all, you know, makes you really distrust everyone in your life if you watch too much of these shows.
I'm doing this thing because I have a child where I don't watch that much TV, which is hard.
But you're having one time with your child.
So I make exceptions for Star Trek. We watch Star Trek together, okay?
Yeah. Arlo's already a Trekkie. We love that.
Yeah.
I you know, I do stand corrected because I have not gotten very far in it, but I have watched the first couple episodes of Ripley on Netflix, which is the new adaptation of Talented Mr. Ripley, the Patricia Highsmith novel. It's shot in very striking black and white. It stars Andrew Scott as Ripley, which is very, very good casting.
He's creepy, like good. Like, yeah. You're just so enthralled. Like he's a creep I would kiss. He starts speaking and you're just totally enthralled. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He's got that perfect, you know, that perfect energy that I've, you know, as someone who really likes those novels, because like he's got that sociopathic energy of like, but at the same time he's just like, it's like this person's bad for me, but I'll let him talk to me a little bit more, like that kind of like right. Like you understand how he worms his way into people's lives even though they should know better, you know?
Right. Oh man. Well, that's great. We managed to all come up with some recommendations. Of course, the top of the list being Carrie's recommendation of seeing a solar eclipse if you can.
And chocolate. I also recommend chocolate.
And she also recommends chocolate, which is very good. But if you want to hear more about Star Trek Discovery or our thoughts on the Three Body Problem, join us again next week when the Prime Subjective will be back to talk about the next episode of Star Trek Discovery Season 5. And on that note, we will see you next time.